You are Locked On Orioles, your daily podcast on the Baltimore Orioles, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey guys, welcome back to Locked On Orioles, your place for Orioles news and analysis from the clubhouse to the warehouse and beyond. As always, I'm your host, Justin McGuire. I'm a veteran baseball journalist who spent 3 years as the Major League Baseball editor for Sporting News. I'm a former Cy Young and Rookie of the Year voter. I do another podcast called Baseball by the Book, and you should definitely check out my latest episode. It's all about the Orioles of 1979 to 1983. And most importantly, for our purposes, I am a lifelong Orioles fan. Guys, today we're going to be joined by Riley Blake. He writes about the Norfolk Tides, who are, of course, the Orioles' AAA affiliate, for Utah Street Report. He's going to tell us all about the 2018 Tides, including which players we should expect to see in Baltimore soon. We'll get to that interview in just a second. Hey, folks, just a reminder. For all the original content of the Locked On Podcast Network, both the podcasts and the written content on every team, go to LockedOnSports.com. And of course, for all your content on the Baltimore Orioles, make sure to go to LockedOnOrioles.com. Hey everybody, welcome back to Locked On Orioles. We're joined now by Riley Blake. He runs a Twitter account called Harbor Park Report, which gives you news and observations about the Norfolk Tides. So Riley, the thing I wanted to ask you first of all is just tell people a little bit about this Twitter account, Harbor Park Report, why you decided to do it, what kind of information people can find if they follow up, that sort of thing.
Yes, so I'm a college junior, rising junior. I was looking for a summer job, and I figured, you know, the best way to get what I wanted to get out of a summer job was to combine the two things I love most, which is baseball and writing. So I ended up looking around for an Orioles blog to write about the Tides for, since I've been going to Tides games since I was probably 5 or 6 years old. And I ended up coming upon Utah Street Report, emailed them. They were incredibly helpful, incredibly gracious, allowing me to do that. And they said, you know, they never had a Tides writer before, but they'd love for me to do game recaps, player profiles, basically whatever I want to do as far as the Tides went. And then I ended up emailing Ian Locke, who's the media relations director for the Tides, and same thing there, just an incredibly helpful, gracious guy who was able to get me a press pass to all the home games and really allow me to have almost any access I wanted to the players, you know, the same level of access as any of the other reporters would have. So that's really how it started. I ended up making the Twitter account because I just didn't want to oversaturate my own Twitter account with Tides things, but I think it's worked out really well. I've gotten a much bigger following than I ever anticipated, and it really allows me to just kind of post my thoughts at any given time about the Tides and about prospects the Orioles are looking at.
Right. So people can find your work at Utah Street Report and also on this Twitter account, right?
Correct.
Okay. So the Twitter account is, for people who, if you're not following it, at Harbor Park RPT. So yeah, definitely Orioles fans should be following that to keep up with what's going on down there in Norfolk. You said you've been going to Tides games since you were a kid. I guess you're a native of the area?
I am, yeah. Oh, it was really nice to see, you know, when they ended up becoming an Orioles affiliate in around 2007. That made a lot of people around this area really happy versus the Mets, which is what they had been for a very long time before that.
Right, yeah. I'm old enough to remember when they were the Tidewater Tides back in the 80s and 70s and 80s, affiliated with the Mets all those years, of course. So let's talk about the Tides a little bit. For Orioles fans who maybe haven't been following the team, how are they doing as a team this year?
They have gone into the year, I mean, obviously with the farm system like the Orioles have, no one really expected them to do anything. And then you add on top of that that they're in the same division as the Durham Bulls, which are the Rays affiliate, the Gwinnett Stripers, who are the Braves affiliate, and the Charlotte Knights, who are the White Sox affiliate. Those three teams have combined the number two, number three, and number four farm systems coming up through the minor league system. So you're talking about a really, really competitive schedule, a really, really hard schedule, and I don't think anyone would have blamed the Tides if they had gone a team that could have lost 80, 90 games. But right now they're sitting at 61-56, and they're a game out of the card in the IL.
AAA is a little bit of a weird animal. I mean, I've talked about Bowie a lot on the podcast because so many of the Orioles prospects started the year there or have gone there since, you know, being traded into the system in recent weeks and that sort of thing. Haven't talked as much about Norfolk. And I was looking at the Norfolk roster before we started talking, and, you know, it's kind of an odd combination of prospects or guys who kind of used to be prospects, but maybe we don't know what to make of them now. And then, you know, veteran major leaguers like Pedro Alvarez is on the roster and that sort of thing. So it's a little bit different. I think it's not pure prospects, maybe the way Double A is. But let's talk about who is on this roster who Orioles fans might see one day. What players have impressed you on the Tides this year who you think maybe have a legitimate shot of being contributors to the Orioles in within the next few years?
Well, one of the guys that's come up very recently that I'm really falling in love with as far as the ability to pitch is Luis Gonzalez, who's a left-handed reliever. The Orioles signed him as a minor league free agent back in 2013. And this year, combined between Bowie and Norfolk, he has 72 strikeouts and 60 innings pitched, and he's pitched with 2.33 ERA. So I've had the opportunity to see him quite a bit. He throws, sits around 94, 95 with his fastball, mixes in a breaking ball every once in a while, 82, 83. And it's that mixture of that fastball sitting primarily, you know, I bet he'd throw it 60, 70% of the time. And then when you add that slow breaking ball in there, it really freezes guys at the AAA level. I mean, I really like what I've seen from him stuff-wise, but even more than that, I like how he's always worked more than one inning. Ron Johnson, who's the manager of the Tides, has allowed him to go at least four outs every single time he's taken the ball for Norfolk, and I think that's a huge thing going forward just in the game of baseball. I think you see it now with the Rays and the opener strategy, which I don't know. I don't expect every team to suddenly start using opening pitchers, but you look at a guy like Josh Hader of Milwaukee and his ability to go two, three innings out of the pen if need be in high leverage situations. And I think they could have that guy with Gonzalez if everything breaks the right way.
Certainly we know that left-handed relief pitchers are always at a premium and always have some value. So that's somebody who, of course, the Orioles should be excited about maybe being in the bullpen within the next few years. Are there other pitchers at Norfolk that you've seen who you think have a chance of either being rotation guys or relief pitchers for the Orioles?
Two of the recently acquired guys, Josh Rogers, who came over in the Britton deal, and Luis Cortez, that came over in the Jonathan Scope deal. They've really impressed me. I've only seen them throw once each, but both outings really impressive. Two very different pitchers. Rogers is a finesse lefty who holds a 1.33 ERA in 20 innings pitched since his acquisition. I saw him sit in the upper 80s with a fastball. He's not going to be a guy that's going to overpower you. Mixes in a really sharp breaking ball, really sharp off-speed stuff, and again, his whole thing is command. Versus a guy like Cody Carroll or Dylan Tate, which were the other two pieces the Orioles acquired in that deal, who kind of have better stuff but maybe need to refine their mechanics a little bit more to be an effective major league pitcher. I think he's already there in terms of command. I don't know if the stuff will play at the big league level, but the thing I was most impressed with is how he works deep into games. He gets a lot of soft contact early on, first pitch, second pitch, and that really keeps his pitch count down. It allows him to work deep in those ball games. And as far as Luis Ortiz goes, different pitcher than Rogers. He's righty, throws hard, you know, sits 92, 93, the ability to dial it all the way up to 97. I see him being a solid number three starter if he develops a true third pitch. I think his slider is ranked, I think, as a 60-grade fastball, or 60-grade slider on Prospect Pipeline. So obviously that's an above-average offering. But if he wants to become a true starter, he's going to have to develop that third pitch. I could see him, if he doesn't end up developing an average changeup, moving to the bullpen. But I think definitely when you look at where the Orioles are, they'd like to see a pitcher come through that'll be reliable.
All right, so turning to position players, maybe the name that Orioles fans are probably, you know, most interested in at this point maybe is DJ Stewart, the outfielder, and he's a guy who I think people expect to be an Oriole at some point. What is his schedule at this point, do you think? When should we expect to see him in Baltimore, and how's he been doing in Norfolk?
I'd love to see him up in September when the rosters expand. I mean, he hasn't really impressed as far as the statistical outlook goes. He's batting in the 230s, I believe, and it's just been, he's one of those hitters that's going to be streaky. He's going to have hot streaks. He's going to have long cold streaks. But at the end of the day, you hope it balances out. He hits lefties much better than he hits righties. But one thing I've really been impressed with that a lot of people that I've seen have been down on recently is his ability to throw from the outfield. MLB Pipeline ranks his arm as a 40 grade. But the arm that I've seen him throw from, make difficult throws from right field, I'm not seeing a 40-grade arm. I'm seeing an arm that could be a 50-grade, maybe even a 55-grade. And the radio broadcasters for the Tides, Pete Mischmud and Jeff McCarriger, they're guys that have been the radio broadcasters for the team for a very long time, and they rave about his arm constantly. So that tells me that it's not something maybe that necessarily the prospect evaluators have gotten wrong in the past, but maybe he has done something to make his arm stronger, and I think that's only going to help him at the next level. He might just be a platoon guy going forward because he hits lefties so much better than he hits righties. But I think he definitely deserves a shot. You know, you can't get much worse than what the Orioles have trotted out there at this point. And the fact that he's about to be 25 years old, there's not a whole lot more he can do in the minor league. And at that point, you're just wasting any kind of prime years you might get out of him.
Yeah, absolutely. It seems like it's time for him to either prove he can do it at the major league level or prove he can't do it at the major league level. So you mentioned that Stewart has struggled a bit in terms of batting average, hitting in the 230s. What about his other offensive skills? I'm talking about the power, ability to draw walks, that sort of thing. How does he look in those areas?
Well, I think he's a guy that's not going to draw. I mean, I've seen where in the past he's drawn a lot of walks. I don't see that in Norfolk, and maybe that's just a product of getting into an extended cold streak where he's just trying to put too much pressure on himself, get outside of his zone, and he's just trying to make something happen as opposed to taking what they're giving him. But I do think that I do like the ability to steal bases that he's been doing. I mean, he has, I believe, 10 stolen bases in Norfolk, and I think that's definitely going to be valuable going forward, especially when you pair that with Cedric Mullins. I mean, I do really like the ability that he has to hit lefties. I don't think he's going to ever be maybe not be an everyday player as far as hitting righties goes, just because of, you know, how he's hit righties this year at Norfolk. But, I mean, if you look at the lefties, he's hit 280, 93 at-bats. He's hit 2 homers, 15 RBIs. I could definitely see him. I mean, worst-case scenario, I could see him being a guy that comes off the bench and hits lefties really well.
You mentioned Cedric Mullins, and obviously we know he has been called up to the Orioles, but he spent some time there down there in Norfolk. How did he look? What were the things that impressed you about Cedric Mullins?
Yeah, you know, I think there were a lot of people clamoring for him to go straight from Bowie to Baltimore, and I think it was a really smart decision in hindsight that they put him in Norfolk, because the first few games he had didn't look comfortable at the plate. He was obviously making all the defensive plays like he always does, but it really took him a little while to get going. But once he did, he was starting rallies left and right at the top of the order, and I really don't think by the time they called him up there was anything left to prove. I mean, he was really just the driving force of that Norfolk offense along with Pedro Alvarez these past few weeks, and I'm very glad to see him in Baltimore and making an impact so far.
Yeah, it's one of the maybe the few positives we can take out of the 2018 season for the Orioles so far. Another name that a lot of fans are going to be familiar with in Norfolk, and is certainly going to be familiar with his last name, and that's Mike Yastrzemski. He's a guy, I actually saw a conversation, you know, among several writers about him on Twitter a few days ago, and I guess the general feeling is that he is not much of a prospect. What do you think about him? How has he performed at Norfolk, and do you think he has any kind of a major league future?
Yeah, I mean, he's 27 years old, which is older than you'd want out of a prospect, even one at Triple A. I could see him being a fourth outfielder. I think he has the abilities defensively to absolutely be a serviceable defensive replacement. The thing that's kind of strange about Yastrzemski is he really struggled with Bowie, and they basically moved him up to Norfolk because they didn't really have anyone else who could play center field before they got Mullins there. And he's really started to hit well in Norfolk, especially his first few games. He's cooled off a little bit lately, but I definitely think he's a guy who I could definitely see having a role in some shape or form at the big league level. I don't know. I don't think it would be a starter. But I don't think the Orioles might not need a starter when you consider Mancini if he ever bounces back and you have Mullins in center. But I could definitely see him playing an important role. It just might not be the role that you're looking for when you look at a true prospect.
And maybe not the role that you would anticipate out of somebody with that kind of lineage, because, of course, his grandfather was the Hall of Famer, Carl Yastrzemski. If people don't know that, I think most people probably do know that, but in case you don't, that's why you recognize the name.
Yeah.
Another guy that Orioles fans, of course, know about, but I was interested in your take on him, is Chance Sisko. He's, a guy who has played in Baltimore and had a chance at the major league level, but has now been sent down. How is he performing in AAA?
Very limited sample size here, but he hasn't looked good at the plate at all. Overall, 222, 2 homers, 7 RBIs. He's hitting lefties better than righties, but again, he's only gotten 13 ABs against lefties. The thing that's really stuck out to me, though, is he's making good throws from behind the plate, but he's just not getting anyone out when base runners try to run on him. And I don't know if that's a combination of pitchers being too slow or some other factor, but from what I've seen, his arm looks fine behind the plate, even if he's not getting the peripherals of actually getting a guy out on the base path.
You mentioned Stewart as a possible September call-up. September is just around the corner. We're just a few weeks away. Among the guys at Norfolk right now, who do you expect to see in a Baltimore uniform in September?
Well, I think you can definitely count on guys that have been there before. Going back, guys like Sardinius, Chance Cisco probably. But I would also like to see a guy that's never been called up before by the Orioles, and that's Drew Doshi. He's a third baseman, recently converted to first base as well because Norfolk just has so many middle infielders and guys that can play third base. But he's just done nothing but hit for average here. He's not going to be a guy that gets on base a ton, but he is a guy that hits a lot of doubles. 22 doubles in only 86 games played. He's had a couple of DL stints. One of their two IL All-Star position players along with DJ Stewart. Yeah, so, I mean, he's bottom line, he's going to be a guy that you can put pencil in at third or first against righties. I think he'll need to be platooned against lefties. He doesn't hit them well at all. Other teams like to use a shift against him, but it really hasn't affected him as much. He's even bunted for a couple of hits, which you love to see, put a little bit of doubt in other teams as far as the viability of that shift. I could see him maybe platooning with someone like Renato Nunez, or maybe the Orioles go out in the offseason and get someone else that hits lefties. And I think the two of them would make a very good combo from either corner infield spot. When I look at him, the first guy that comes to mind is maybe Matt Duffy from Tampa Bay. A third baseman that's not going to hit for a ton of power. He's going to hit somewhere in that 260, 270 range. Might not get on base as much as you want, but he's going to give you plenty of singles and doubles.
Thanks a lot for joining us today, Riley. If people want to check out your work again, they can go to Utah Street Report, or they can check out your Twitter account, which is at Harbor Park RPT. And again, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yep, thank you.
And that's going to do it for another edition of Locked On Orioles. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.